Welcome to The Family Doctor, Lessons Learned, Wisdom Shared. My name is Thomas White, and I am a family physician in North Carolina. In 2021, another North Carolina family physician, Dr. Lee Beatty, and I created this podcast with the vision of having conversations with fellow family physicians to get to know them better personally, to hear the lessons they have learned in their careers, and to allow them to share their wisdom. This is a collaborative effort with the North Carolina Academy of Family Physicians. We very much appreciate the Academy supporting this and sharing this podcast on their website and in their monthly emails. We have no disclosures to share. We have no advertisers, and the podcast is provided for no compensation or other gain except our satisfaction that our colleagues, both young and old, will benefit in some way. We hope you will listen, learn, and feel wiser for doing so. We can be reached with feedback and questions at thefamilydoctorpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for joining us. Now let's listen to this month's family doctor, their lessons learned, and their wisdom shared. Think of someone you know who seems to not only understand the past and appreciates the present, but sees where things should go and could go and helps make that happen. Think of that individual you might call a visionary, a change agent. Our guest this month fits that description, a family physician who helped grow his practice into one of the largest community practices in the state, who helped establish a model family medicine residency program, who helped transform how Medicaid is delivered in North Carolina, and who has served and continues to serve as a respected advisor and expert in healthcare policy, a leader with vision who has never lost his perspective as a small-town family physician. Dr. Alan Dobson was born in Wilson, North Carolina. He attended North Carolina State University and the Bowman Gray School of Medicine and completed a family medicine residency at East Carolina, where he served as chief resident. After residency, Dr. Dobson and his wife moved to Mount Pleasant, North Carolina, where he opened a practice which grew from one office to what is now known as Cabarrus Family Medicine, with 9 practice sites in Cabarrus, Mecklenburg, Rowan, and Stanley counties, a residency program of superb reputation, over 300 employees, and more than 50 physicians. Throughout his career, Dr. Dobson has been active in the North Carolina Academy of Family Physicians. In 1992, he was selected as the North Carolina Family Physician of the Year. He has served the Academy in a variety of roles, including board member, and in 1998-99 as president. In addition to being a practicing family physician back home in his community and a leader in family medicine, Dr. Dobson has been known across the state and country as an expert in healthcare policy and population health. He served as Assistant Secretary of Health for the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, and as the state Medicaid director. A leader in the transformation of Medicaid in North Carolina, he is a founder and past president and CEO of Community Care of North Carolina, which has been recognized nationally for achieving quality outcomes, cost savings, and patient and physician satisfaction. As Medicaid reform continued, he led the organization of Community Care Physician Network, or CCPN, for which he remains president. Currently, Dr. Dobson also serves as editor-in-chief for medical economics. He is an adjunct professor of family medicine at the UNC Chapel Hill School of Medicine, and he remains a trusted professional and leader in his hometown. We are honored for this visionary and family medicine legend to join us today. Welcome, Dr. Alan Dobson.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be with you.
I really appreciate it. Been looking forward to talking with you. How are you, and how's your family doing these days?
Doing good. I miss seeing you. It's been a while. We've been colleagues for, gosh, many years now.
But many. In fact, I want to share with, remind you and share with the listeners, one of the first times I ever met you. But
right.
I know you're staying busy, doing a lot of things. So what are you up to these days?
Yeah, gosh, Tom, it seems like I am really busy, even though I'm supposed to be retired. So I guess I'm like Jim Jones and flunking retirement these days. busy, still chair of CCPN, Community Care Physician Network, and edit medical economics, and do a lot of projects related to docs. I think one of the things, I'm doing a little economic development in my small town here and trying to help move the economy along. Interesting thing I'm doing is mentoring young startup businesses through an MIT entrepreneur mentorship program, which is kind of fun. Way off the beaten path. So having fun and trying to keep myself out of trouble.
Yeah. Well, and you're in the restaurant business, right?
Yeah. I mean, I am. It's doing pretty well. It's been a challenging couple of years. This is one of those things, no good deed will go unpunished. We decided to renovate a very large historic building in Mount Pleasant, and happened to be a hosiery mill before it closed, and before that, a mercantile. And then you're faced with, well, we've spent all this money renovating a 15,000 square foot structure. What are we going to put in it?
Hmm.
And the obvious thing was a restaurant. But who's going to come successfully run a restaurant in a small town? So we decided to do it ourselves. So it's been an interesting run. I like to tell people, it's like, well, you know, running a restaurant is kind of like running a medical practice. And they always look at me cross-eyed. But it's all about taking care of people, right?
Right, right. Taking care of good people, hiring good people, right. Having a good business plan.
Creating a team, having a good vision for the service you're going to provide.
That's cool. Alan, I'd like for you to share a little bit about your childhood, where you grew up, how you got interested in medicine. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, gosh. Well, first, I'm an only child, which seemed to be, you know, fairly common in my family. My parents were World War II. My dad was a World War II vet, and grew up on the farm. So they were all from Iredell County, the northern Iredell in the countryside. I was born in eastern North Carolina, Wilson, and then moved to Roanoke Rapids for a while, and then back to Raleigh. So I've lived all over North Carolina. Graduated high school in Raleigh, and then NC State, and then Wake Forest for med school, and East Carolina for residency, and then back to this end of the state for practice for 40 years.
Yeah. When did you become interested in medicine? I think you had an uncle who was a physician, right?
Yeah, I did. And good memory. I talked a little bit about him at the academy. My great uncle, and he was a GP to start with, and then went and got boarded in family medicine. And he was a solo physician in Harmony, North Carolina. And he was that old school doc who showed up in the morning. People were lined up to be seen. And when things got a little slower, he'd get in the car, and he and his nurse would go make home visits on all the elderly patients. And he would take their medicines. He had his own little apothecary in his office, and he would go and take refill homebound patients' medicines, and had a full certified lab, and really kind of out there for his day, and lots of great stories about going on visits with him even before I went to medical school.
So I when I talked to Jim Jones, we talked about that transition from the GP era to the specialty of family medicine, because a lot of folks, a lot of our younger colleagues, I mean, they weren't around when there was this thing called a GP. And right. that transition and that development of a specialty was incredibly important. And a lot of people worked very hard to make that happen.
Yeah. And Jim obviously was in that group, and my Uncle Meb and Robertson, Dr. Robertson, he wasn't in a leader in the movement, but he was first to sign up to say, absolutely, I'm going to do this. He was big on continuing education. So, you know, it was not a problem for him to pass the exams. And, you know, he really believed in providing care for the people out in that part of the county, which is why he got a certified lab. He did all those things to keep up. And so it that relationship with his patients and, you know, kind of grounded me. And, you know, he would get paid cash, $10, $20, even though he gave people medicines. And if they couldn't pay, it wasn't a big deal. He'd write it down, and sometime in the future, they'd pay him.
Right. Well, what a great role model.
Yeah.
So when you went to Bowman Gray, did you know you wanted to do family medicine?
Yeah, I mean, I went there because, you know, I said, well, I'd like to do what he did. I'd like to practice in a community. I think he thought I would come back and practice with him or take over. Ended up going a different route, but I think that was my initial desire, and it was amplified because I really liked all my rotations. I couldn't decide one over the other. I flirted with ENT for a little bit because I was a musician in college and enjoyed playing, and I thought, well, that would be kind of fun, but that was short-lived. I, you know, gravitated back to family medicine.
Well, I'm glad you did. Did you flirt with becoming a professional musician?
Well, I kind of worked my way through college and earned a lot of money for medical school playing. So I had my experience of that, but also experienced that, you know, it's not quite as glamorous as you might think, you know, late nights and and the work isn't steady. So,
it paid some bills.
It definitely paid some bills, yeah, for sure.
Let me share something with you that I think you'll remember. I found 2015, a publication called North Carolina Health News did an article about you. And I think this was back during some of the struggles and debates about Medicaid in North Carolina. But the title of the article got my attention. The title was "The Small Town Doc with Big Ideas." And I don't know if you remember that. Small Town Doc with Big Ideas. I loved it. So how did you go from being the small town doctor in Mount Pleasant to not just the doctor with big ideas, but some pretty big accomplishments? What was the story? Start with Mount Pleasant. How did you find it, and where did that go from there?
Well, I don't think anyone ends up with the grand plan of where I'm going to go do this. It's always the door or the challenge in front of you, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when Charlie Rhodes is my longtime partner, we went to med school and residency together. We ended up going to East Carolina because of Jim Jones, right? Mm-hmm. You know, one of my mentors, and probably as influential as my uncle in what kind of physician I'd be. And we went there in the early days when the med school was just starting. We were in the first full class of family medicine residents, and we were working as the only residents on services with the attending as our supervisor. And occasionally there'd be an upper level resident, but the training we got there was one holistic. It was, we got to do everything. And, you know, the notion of going to a small town and providing what had been your, my training, comprehensive, continuous, you know, serving the community. I was chief resident and I had taken on the task of letting all the residents know where all the practice opportunities were from the Office of Rural Health, which is where I got to know Jim Bernstein. And this one, Mount Pleasant, kept coming up, and my wife and I decided to swing by on the way to, I think, a wedding in Charlotte that we were going to. And we came by Mount Pleasant, and they had a little reception to show us around, and everyone invited showed up except for one person who happened to be in the hospital, who was terribly upset that she couldn't make it. And we just fell in love with the little town. Funny story is that it happened to be the stoplight on 49 that, as a musician traveling back and forth from Raleigh to Charlotte, would always make me mad because it would be red in the middle of the light and there was no one anywhere on the roads, but the stoplight was always red and we'd have to stop for it. So we ended up settling here. But yeah, I mean, we came here with the notion of providing all the care that we had been trained, which included home visits, admitting to the hospital. That's another story, because we had to fight for our privileges and prove our, you know, prove our mettle, so mm-hmm. to speak, of everything we wanted to do, including OB and admitting to the ICU and CCU and doing all that we were trained to do and providing that personal care. And that's really what made the difference in everything we did from then forward, is that the patients responded. We were able to convince them that this is the way medicine ought to be practiced.
All right. And there was not a hospital in Mount Pleasant. So Concord, right?
Right. We were 20 minutes from Concord, which is, we're right on the edge of the county. Albemarle is maybe 20 minutes further east, but a smaller hospital. So we had a fairly large hospital in Concord that we admitted to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's similar to Cherryville and Shelby, where
yep.
when I came back home, about the same distance, I didn't do OB like you did, but we were in the intensive care unit, and except for OB, we both did very full service family medicine, just like we were trained to do.
Right. And those were wonderful days, I think. It was hard, but very, very gratifying.
Right. No, I agree. So,
in some senses, easier than it is today. Right. It's a lot easier to see a hospital fall up when you actually took care of them in the hospital.
That's well said. You have. It's a lot easier to admit someone to the hospital when you're the one admitting them.
That's right.
It's a struggle sometimes these days. Yeah. So you grew from a solo practice, or not solo, but a small single practice in Mount Pleasant, to Cabarrus Family Medicine with what, 9-10 offices?
Yeah, and 50 some docs and a residency program. And I tell the story, it's like, you know, Dr. Barringer retired. We renovated his small office, actually right across the street where we live, and opened 1 week later. And I think I saw 28 people the first day. I got slammed, and it really never slowed down. And again, it was in some sense, that time reminds me of today. You know, healthcare back then had gotten, you know, pretty impersonal. And people were looking for something different, at least in this community. And we gave it to them. They could call and talk to somebody. We had worked them in. if they were sick. We'd stay till the last patient was seen. And we provided holistic care. And we admitted to the hospital, which most of the non-multi-specialty group internists didn't do. So suddenly, we were taking care of the elderly patients in this end of the county, and the families appreciated it. And then they started coming. So our growth was incredible. And then we started having people traveling 30, 40 minutes to come to our office in Mount Pleasant. And we did, you know, we built a new office because the one we started in wasn't big enough when Charlie Rhodes joined after his military service. But we couldn't keep up. So we ended up opening an office in Concord and changed our name to Cabarrus Family Medicine and started hiring more people to do what we, the style of medicine that we were becoming known for.
Alan, I think I came and visited you, and it had to be in that original office. It had to be either maybe the fall of 83 or 1984, because I was trying to decide. I stayed on the faculty a couple of years, but I was trying to decide what I was going to do as far as practice, and thought I wanted to go back to Cherryville, but I came and visited you. And what I remember about the visit was you pulled out this thing. I don't know if we called it a computer, but you pulled out something that we called a computer, and you had, like, you were showing me, you had your patients and their demographics, and you were talking about how this is going to help us keep up with their visits and their medical history and organize all the data and not just write it on a little 3x5 index card. And I was totally lost, totally, like, I don't even know what he's talking about. But you guys were very early adopters of technology.
That's true. I mean, to what you, if you remember when we were training, you had your paper chart that you would have your problem list, and you would create flow charts for diabetics. Yes. It was the early days of population health, I guess,
right?
Or at least on a patient level. And we would keep index cards where you would, by month, you would put the index card with the patient, what you needed to bring them back each month. And when they came back, you would take it out. That way you knew who didn't show up. Mm-hmm. All very manual. And we thought the grand idea, gosh, what if we took one of these compact computers, right? And we would just...
Right. It had to be compact or K-Pro.
Something like that, right? And that, wouldn't it be nice if we just kept a list of patients who needed certain follow-up appointments? So it was the early days of, you know, going away from the index card boxes to creating some sort of flow sheet that wasn't just the individual patient, but some way to recall them back to the office and make sure that things didn't fall through the cracks.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. I still remember just sort of being stunned and you had a vision for where that was going to go.
Well, not that I knew how to do the computers. It was it needed to be done, and I certainly wasn't best at it.
Well, Alan, we're going to take a break in a few minutes, but before we do that, let me ask you. You helped found a practice in Mount Pleasant. It led to Cabarrus. You got a residency program. You've been involved with the academy and, you know, the state level, with the Department of Health and so many things. But is there one accomplishment you're most proud of as a physician and a physician leader?
It's been a crazy ride, Tom. I mean, you know, it's career takes you where the opportunities are. And I think probably if you ask me, the one thing that I enjoyed the most and I'm the most proud of is the residency program.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is that it's the thing that's most enduring. We did the residency because at the time we couldn't find family docs who were trained like we thought they ought to be trained. And we needed to have more docs in our community to support the population. So we created our own. We did it differently than most, which we said we wanted not to have a model practice, but we wanted a practice that actually had residents in it so that it was a clinical practice, almost like the old apprenticeship model. That, and we had four family medicine clinics that we trained in and a very large clinical practice that these residents would come apprentice with us for 3 years. And I think putting a residency, now it's more commonplace than we used to have model practices where the residents would, it was basically a residency clinic. Mm-hmm. But this model is not so unusual anymore. Back then it was. And being able to train the future family physicians and the students is probably the most gratifying thing I've done through my entire career.
And you should be proud. I mean, look at all the folks who have been associated or graduated from that residency program or taught at that residency program. And you and Charlie Rhodes and Maureen Murphy and, I mean, so many
Mark
physicians,
Robinson,
Mark yes. Robinson, and
your partner.
And, right. I'm now a beneficiary, having a great partner, Josh Carpenter.
And I think, you know, one thing I'm proud of is that we train family docs to be able to go into small towns, rural areas. And I think our program still is one of the top in the state, putting docs in those areas of right. need in North Carolina.
Right, right. Well, and what a great contribution that has been. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, we'll hear more from Dr. Alan Dobson. As we pause for a moment, it's a good time to remember the words of Henry David Thoreau. It's not what you look at that matters, it's what you see. This month and every month, we will talk to a family physician who has truly seen and not just looked, who has genuinely listened and not just heard. Family physicians from whom we will learn and hopefully become wiser ourselves. We hope you are enjoying this episode. Thanks for listening, and thanks to the NCAFP for their support. Now, let's get back to the podcast. Welcome back to our podcast. We're talking with Dr. Alan Dobson, who started his practice in Mount Pleasant, North Carolina in 1983, and who has had a most interesting career in family medicine and healthcare since then. Alan, I'd like to ask you at this point to share with us some of the lessons you've learned, whether that's in the exam room, as a administrator, a leader, the boardroom, the governor's office. You've got a lot of places where you certainly have been and have learned. What are some of the lessons you would like to share with the folks listening to this podcast?
Well, I think, Tom, the first thing I ought to say is that what we do is all about the relationship. It's a relationship with your patients, but it's also a relationship with your community. So if you're not involved in your community as a physician, you're missing a big part of the joy of being a family physician. It just opens up so many opportunities. I think next I would say you can be a change agent. And I would challenge everyone, if it's not you, then who? Even small things in your community, I know every one of us see things that could be better. So why not roll up your sleeves and see if you give it a whirl? That's how I ended up getting into some of these things. It's like you start out and it turns into something else. because you're trying to make a difference. I think the other thing is always do the right thing. Always do the right thing and keep the patients in the center of all your decision making. And then something I always tell residents is lead by doing. I know you've had Mark Robinson on, and we talk a lot about servant leadership. Being a leader has less to do with being in charge and more to do about rolling up your sleeves and working along with others to make a positive impact in wherever you choose to do that.
Yeah. So let's go back to one of those lessons there, Alan, because I've always had an interest in this, and that's this notion of the relationship with your community. And I don't fault anyone who perhaps has to commute. They, for family reasons or significant others, they work in a community, but they live elsewhere. When you do that, it's harder to have that relationship with the community, isn't it? It's harder to roll up your sleeves if you're not immersed in the community somehow, doing sports events or whatever.
No, I think that's right. You know, living where you work is important. It doesn't mean that you can't be a good physician.
Right.
But I think there is something unique about that. And certainly in a small community, I used to tell people I would choose to go to Food Lion at odd hours because it would take me an hour to go get bread and milk because you would end up talking to somebody on every aisle.
Right.
And it was particularly true during COVID. If I'm down at the restaurant, people still stop me to come by their table, and they got to ask me something about COVID, or they are something that they've experienced. So it's I think being in the community and you're seen as a leader and accept the challenge, it can be extremely rewarding.
Yeah, you know, Greg Griggs likes to talk about family medicine, and we are that trusted relationship in healthcare for people, for our patients. We're the person they trust. They're going to come to you and ask you about COVID. They're going to ask you tomorrow. They're going to ask you your opinion on something because they know you and they trust you, and you built that relationship.
It's been said that all politics are local. I will tell you, all healthcare is local, and I think we've seen the bad side of that during COVID is that the trusted physician relationship and pharmacy relationship was lost in the early days of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
It became more of a government and TV thing than it was something that came from your physician.
Right. So you talked about going to the grocery store, Alan. Anyone ever stop you and look in your grocery cart to see what you were buying and say, "Oh, Dr. Dobson, I can't believe you're eating that or drinking that."
Oh yeah, yeah. So I'll tell you a great story, Tom. When I took over, we took over from Dr. Behringer. He was a strict vegetarian. He had this interesting notion that a lot of health problems were caused by brucellosis toxin. That's another story. Mm. But it was really, he tried to get people to stay off meat and dairy products, basically a low cholesterol diet. Mm-hmm. And so, we have our local burger place, and it was a couple months after, you go in and order and they call out your number to come pick up your order. Well, I walked in and ordered a cheeseburger with chili and slaw and fries. And after all these years of being you preached to about their diet, they called out, "Dr. Dobson, your chili and slaw cheeseburger with fries is ready." And everyone in the restaurant started clapping. So I won a lot of brownie points by being human. Yeah.
you brought happiness back to Mount Pleasant.
Or moderation anyway.
Moderation. People could eat and not feel too terribly guilty.
That's right.
Oh, that's funny. Anything else along those lines you want to share, Alan? Those were really, really good pearls that you have already shared.
Well, it's, you know, I would say to our colleagues out there is that we all have beliefs in how medicine should be, right? And and so I think it's important to not be defeatist when it's not working the way we think it should be. Paint a vision and then try to articulate it so that others will follow your example and just start making little inroads. You know, you and I talked about this, Tom. It's like we've spent decades. Now we've been through this like 40 years, right? But we've spent decades as family physicians, primary care physicians, trying to get the wrong people to love us. We, you know, whether it's hospitals and our privileges or insurance companies or even the government, we ought to be concentrating on our patients loving us, which is kind of where you are with DPC. It's like having that relationship back with your patients, because it's not worked out. We've kind of chased all these, you know, these dangling shiny objects in hopes that, you know, primary care would be treated better, whether it's patient-centered medical home or value-based care or you name it, the flavor of the decade of what we need to be doing to so that we can be valued in the system and paid better. And in reality, all of us want to be relevant, and we want to feel like we're contributing to our patients' lives. And I think if we turn our attention back to that, we'll have a lot healthier workforce, and we'll be much happier with our profession.
Alan, I heard you share that many times. Academy functions, other speeches, with community care, this notion that, you know, patients are our best advocate, and, you know, we've spent way too much time and energy fretting and fighting over making people appreciate and love us. And I didn't always grasp it, but I guess with years and whatever wisdom I've gleaned from people like you, I understand it so much better now.
You know, I like to be upbeat about things. I see a lot of our colleagues kind of down in the mouth about how things are going. And I will say, they asked me, would you do this again? And I says, in a heartbeat, would you, Tom?
Right. I would.
Because I think the thing that I regret actually in my kind of circuitous route of doing a lot of stuff related to supporting primary care was that, you know, I moved too far away from patient care, which is really the joy of what we do. And I would do it again in a heartbeat. And I would say to all our colleagues out there, keep your head up, because what we do is really, really important. It almost feels, Tom, like 1983 to me. If you think about what our patients are craving, we're being told, well, just go on the internet. You can get your primary care there, right? Just imagine if, like in your practice, patients could pick up the phone and talk to a live person and could see their physician and have a trusted relationship. I think it would be like 1983 again. People would be so, so busy because you're, again, working for your patients, not the insurance company or this corporatization that we see going on.
Well, Alan, you have always been upbeat. I don't know that there's ever a time that I've heard you speak or you and I've talked on the phone, even through some of the darkest hours of the academy and politics and Medicaid, I can't remember any time that you didn't sound upbeat. And I've appreciated that. And I think it's helped your physician colleagues more than you know.
Well, thank you, Tom. You got to believe it and feel it in your heart, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what we are. I always say we're the hugging specialty, right? Because it really is about relationships.
Right. Right. Except during COVID.
That's true.
Virtual hugs. That's right. So, Alan, I've made a few notes here of things that I think are very memorable, and I'm going to share some of these back for me, for the audience. One of the things you mentioned was really about your career, and that's this notion that you didn't have all this planned out, but doors opened, and you opportunities presented themselves, and you recognize those, and you, in a very optimistic way, you took advantage of those. You rolled up your sleeves. You mentioned that a couple of times. You rolled up your sleeves, and your advice to us and to our young colleagues is roll up your sleeves, get involved, focus on that relationship with your patient and relationship with the community. Those are some really strong takeaways that I've heard from you during this podcast. And to close with that, just to reemphasize, I think you said it well, that patients matter most. They are our best advocate for family medicine. And if we continue to do that and focus on the right thing, I'm hearing you say family medicine has a strong future and a bright future.
Absolutely. It's probably one of the hardest specialties because it's breadth and complexity, but it's also the most rewarding.
Hmm. Well said. Alan, I'm gonna close with a quote that I hope you will appreciate, and it's certainly meant to be a sincere compliment. I know a heck of a lot more about basketball and baseball and football than I do hockey. But there was a famous hockey player, Wayne Gretzky. Real hockey fans referred to him as the great one, right? The great one. And he was known for this quote that he doesn't skate where the puck is or where it's where it was. He skates where he thinks it's going to be down the road. He looks ahead, probably two or three passes ahead as to where the puck was going to be. And you've done that with your career. You've been a visionary. You've seen where family medicine was and is, and where you felt it should be, where healthcare should be in North Carolina and in our country. And for that, you are to be commended and thanked. I want you to know how much I appreciate you joining me for this podcast.
I enjoyed it. It's always good talking to old friends.
Thank you, Alan. Please join us next month when we speak to another family doctor and hear their lessons learned and their wisdom shared. Until then, take good care of yourself and those you love.